whilst counting has not concluded in a number of very close seats, it is clear that Mr Turnbull and his coalition will form a government, whether or not it's a minority government or a majority government of one or two seats. It is clear they will form a government.
Welcome to your generic live show. This is the generic live show with Dale Campbell.
Thanks for joining us here on a Sunday. Well, I don't know what the hell is. What is happening? Yay! The show is broken! Yay! We can't fix it! Continue. Hey, you know, bad news delivered in a jaunty undertone like this one. This music even sounds like bad news is even more tolerable. Like Malcolm Turnbull forming a government, that is sad news. But jaunty, nevertheless, when delivered in that sort of music. Don't you think that's jaunty? Yes. Bill Shorten conceded and admitted defeat earlier today. That was the case.
I want to put something on the table today.
Why is everything broken? I leave the studio for 2 seconds because I have a flu and a fever and everything tends to crap. But anyway, so here is that noise that you heard in the bumper is Bill Shorten conceding. Here is Malcolm Turnbull's response to that. Take a listen.
Earlier today, Bill Shorten called me and congratulated me on being re-elected as Prime Minister. And I thank Bill for that call. He congratulated me and Lucy, and I thanked him and Chloe for making that call. And I have to say, on a family note, when Bill called me, I had our little granddaughter Isla on my left hip. So she was a one-year-old witness to history. When I was having that discussion with Mr. Shorten.
And that is Mr. Turnbull's reaction. Now, something else that Mr. Shorten brought up in his press conference that he held earlier this afternoon, electronic voting. We are a rural nation. We are a leading democracy, as you'll hear Mr. Shorten put it. And we need to introduce electronic voting because we are a rural nation. It shouldn't take 8 days to determine who is Prime Minister of the country. We cannot afford that economically. There's a bipartisan call for electronic voting. Have a listen to Mr. Shorten's words.
Today's about Labor recognising that we can't form a government. But in a non-partisan spirit, I will be writing to Mr. Turnbull and saying, really, we're a grown-up democracy. It shouldn't be taking 8 days to find out who's won and who's lost. I actually think it's long overdue to look at electronic voting in this country. I think that we should, in a bipartisan fashion, set the groundwork for electronic voting. We can't afford to have our nation drift for 8 days after an election. Australians participate in the process. I take nothing away from the professionalism of the Australian Electoral Commission. But it's the 21st century. We're a leading democracy. I think we should be able to find out who won and who lost in a quicker time than we've seen.
I've been an advocate of electronic voting for a long time. And I would commend you to the work of the New South Wales Electoral Commission, which has been more enthusiastic, I think, than its federal counterpart. Yes, this is something we must look at. And absolutely, so you can... passion of mine or an interest of mine for a long time.
That is a good start, by the way, and I don't know if I mentioned this last hour, but it's a good sign when two people, first issue that they can agree upon is e-voting. This article also mentions that as well, but there you go. That's a call for a bipartisan effort to look at electronic voting, and I wouldn't be opposed to electronic voting if it continues to maintain the same protocol, and no one loses their job, of course, in that respect. Now, I want to get to this in its full detail. If you've been living under a rock, well, poor you. poor you, and lucky you actually in a lot of aspects, because this week has been a big week when it comes to politics in the world, and it's become probably one of the most memorable events in terms of politics. And this includes Hillary Clinton being let off the hook, quote unquote, let off the hook when it comes to her using a private email servers, as the FBI director James Comey puts out, multiple servers across multiple devices. James Comey drags Hillary Clinton through the mud and then doesn't recommend an indictment. We have the highlights for you of Director Comey and his what he lays out for the Hillary Clinton. Then we'll get to, is Hillary Clinton disqualified? Has she disqualified herself from the presidency? This is Director James Comey. Wow, we're really smooth sailing here on the Jerick Live Show today, aren't we? Real smooth. Yeah. What is going on here today in the control room? Not a lot, apparently. Here is Director Tim. We'll do it again. There we go. Apparently there's an ad that's going to start. All right. So, and then we'll get to this. And then we'll bring you John Krause explaining why he believes Hillary Clinton has disqualified herself from the presidency. Let's take a listen to James Comey first. His mouth's moving. Ain't no words coming out of his mouth.
Now, here we go. Guy's investigation of Secretary Clinton's use of a personal email system during her time as Secretary of State. Secretary Clinton used several different servers and administrators of those servers during her 4 years at the State Department. And she also used numerous mobile devices to send and to read email on that personal domain. From the group of 30,000 emails returned to the State Department in 2014, 110 emails in 52 email chains have been determined by the owning agency to contain classified information at the time they were sent or received. 8 of those chains contained information that was top secret at the time they were sent. 36 of those chains contained secret information at the time, and 8 contained confidential information at the time. That's the lowest level of classification. Separate from those, about 2,000 additional emails were upclassified to make them confidential. Those emails had not been classified at the time that they were sent or received. I should add here that we found no evidence that any of the additional work-related emails were intentionally deleted in an effort to conceal them in some way. Although we did not find clear evidence that Secretary Clinton or her colleagues intended to violate laws governing the handling of classified information, there is evidence that they were extremely careless in their handling of very sensitive, highly classified information. Although there is evidence of potential violations of the statutes regarding the handling of classified information, our judgment is that no reasonable prosecutor would bring such a case. In looking back at our investigations into the mishandling or removal of classified information, we cannot find a case that would support bringing criminal charges on these facts.
That is, and now we segue into John Cass, Chicago Tribune columnist, and why he believes Hillary Clinton has disqualified herself from the presidency, and some analysis from me on the other side here. If this works. Can the control room work today?
Hillary Clinton has disqualified herself.
Here we go.
She lied to the American people about what she did with top secret information kept on a server in her basement. What she did was put her personal ambition over the interests of the American people and the nation.
But I know there have been questions about my emails, so I want to address that directly, and then I will take a few questions.
And that can't be allowed. That can't be accepted. To accept it there's a heavy price to pay. So consider this, whether you're a Hillary hater, a Hillary lover, Hillaryista, whether you're a thoughtful Democrat, an angry conservative, a Republican disillusioned with Donald Trump, consider it. That if Hillary Clinton were a junior Foreign Service officer and had done what she'd done with the emails, she would have been booted out of the government and banned from government service. She would have lost her security clearance, and she would never be hired again. So how do you promote such a person to the presidency of the United States? The danger in all of this, of course, is that the American people come to believe that there are two sets of justice, two standards of justice, one for them and one for the elites. That, and what that does, it breeds cynicism. And at a time when we're already cynical and hurting economically and fractured and set up into tribal groups politically, it's not a good thing. It's not a good thing at all.
And that is John Cass, reporter from the Chicago Tribune. What is this video? It says... Shush. It says Clinton speaking in Chicago. I want to see what this video is, if it's anything related to it or not. Let's have a listen.
And to the Reverend and Jackie and the entire Jackson family, I think we all owe you a round of applause.
No, I don't think...
In Congress, who are there every single day...
No, I don't. It's not relevant at all. I thought it would have been that C-SPAN video. Would have been handy to have that, by the way. Chicago Tribune. Have that video you reference as the next video in your player. Ta-da! The question raised there is, does Hillary Clinton disqualify herself from the presidency? From my personal belief, and this is me personal belief, this is Dale Murray Campbell sitting here at 17 minutes past 10 on Sunday evening, the 10th of July. Is Hillary Clinton disqualified? Or does she disqualify herself? I believe not. Does she disqualify herself from... Would I vote for Hillary Clinton? Absolutely not. I mean, she broke the law. She was acknowledged to break the law. And she's continuing to say that everything is okay. And I've mentioned this on the program before, I'm a person of politically left-leaning. I wouldn't say I'm a Democrat, because I'm in the wrong country for that. But I would say this. I look at candidates as menu options. I don't praise candidates. People, like I mentioned last hour, people are flawed and people make mistakes. But this is not a person mistake. You think of it, if it was anyone else. And by the way, James Comey didn't just say that Hillary Clinton, there were no charges brought to Hillary Clinton, there would be no further charges brought to her entire staff that is involved with this, by the way. That is what is implied there, because that is what's implied. Now, so is she a bad person? Absolutely. Should she be prosecuted? Absolutely, because laws are laws for a reason. Will she be prosecuted? No. Will she win the presidency? Potentially, yes. I mean, that is too early for me to call sitting here in July. But is she likely to win the presidency? Well, she's got, I would say, a 50-50 chance. I don't think those other third-party candidates would take anything away from Mrs. Clinton. But I would say this. It's... I don't know what the end game here. Does she disqualify herself from the presidency? No. Why? Because she knew what she was doing. That is the biggest part to all of this. She knew what she was doing when she was doing this. What? If she didn't know what she was doing, and she was genuinely coming out here and going, whoopsie, then maybe she would come off as inexperienced. But we're not talking about as an inexperienced person here. We're talking about a highly experienced politician here. If she was genuinely coming out here going, whoops, sorry about that. She's not apologizing for any of this. She's playing this as calculated as she can. But so I don't think the American people may have disqualified her as the president, but I don't think she's disqualified herself from the presidency. My two cents worth. Still remarkable nevertheless, and we'll see how this plays out overall. So not optimistic at all about this one. As we continue here on the Generic Live Show, here on a Sunday, well, I want to bring this Republican governor passing transgenders can use any bathrooms they like. I want to bring that to you because it is important. We want to squeeze that in, as well as Ghostbusters premieres this Thursday. Is it any good? What are people saying? Are people saying that it's good? Are people saying it's bad? We'll have to find out. It's 10:21.
Finally found the most generic live show. This is the Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell.
Thanks for joining us here on a Sunday, or here on the Generic Live Show. It's Dale Campbell with you. Want to bring this story to you. Republican Governor Charlie Baker signed a bill into law on Friday. Apparently this happened on further digging. On commercial break, that happened on Friday. That happened on Friday, but it's coming out now because on Sunday. Before we need to get the stories lined up before that. I want to get my opinion out on this one.
I tried.
Whoa! I didn't try. God, everything's wonky today. I don't know what's wrong. But anyway, I'm sick. That's probably why. Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker signed landmark legislation allowing transgender people to use bathrooms and locker rooms. That's a big one. In accordance with their gender identity and banning discrimination in public accommodation based on gender identity. The House and Senate worked out their differences between each chamber versions of the legislation this week, but approving the final version on Thursday and sending it to Baker for his signature. Over the last several months, Baker, a moderate Republican, has been cagey about whether he had signed such a bill, but he eventually indicated that he would improve it. Senate version, Senate Bill 735, passed in May, contains many compositions sought to counter the objections frequently made by conservatives that laws assuring trans people access appropriate facilities that could fraudulently buy men to enter women's restrooms and locker rooms, and the corrupt gender identity is too vague to be established by law. The legislation dictates that Massachusetts Commission of Discrimination to develop policies and recommendations on when and how a person's identity would be established. Now, I'm going to get hate mail for this. Actually, we have audio here. Let's The audio has worked out so well for Australia. Let's try it again.
Massachusetts Governor Charlie Baker signed a landmark bill into law that allows transgender people to use bathrooms and locker rooms that match their gender identity and bans discrimination in public accommodations based on gender identity. The Commonwealth's House and Senate worked out differences between each chamber's versions of the legislation this week and sent the bill to Baker, a moderate Republican, on Thursday. For months, he's been dogged by questions about whether he would sign such a bill, but he did insist on signing a modified version of the measure that passed the Senate, which contains a compromise of sorts to counter unfounded objections frequently made by conservatives that laws assuring transgender people's access to appropriate facilities could be used fraudulently by men to enter to women's restrooms and locker rooms, even though there has never been one instance of this happening in the United States. The legislation calls for new policies on when and how a person's gender identity is legally established and directs the state attorney general to develop regulations for prosecuting individuals who, quote, assert gender identity for an improper purpose.
That sums up everything that I just said there. So here's the thing, and before regular listeners of the broadcast go, oh, here we go again, here's the point. Now, I am all for transgender people. Now, here is where my kind of traditionalist kind of side of me comes out a little bit. So it's a scary place. Surprise. Because I identify myself as a traditionalist, with some exceptions. First and foremost, it's none of the government's business what people do. Like we mentioned with the greyhound racing, earlier on in the broadcast. So it's none of the government's business on which restroom that the people use. That's some of the arguments. Except when it comes to men entering into women's restroom and women entering men's restroom. Because, well, why would you do that? First of all, second of all, ew, gross. Okay, here's the thing. One thing I want to make clear with that, I'm not against transgendered people. I know plenty of transgendered people. That's not the point. The point that any minority, including myself, in that broad umbrella, my microphone, doesn't have a right to anything. And you got to, and yes, that is very, very segregationist of me to say that. But minority people don't have a right to anything. And like we see with, and this goes all the way back to women, the women voting argument. Women earned their right in society to have a vote and have a say in how society is run. They earned that right. Last time I checked, gay and trans people didn't earn anything. This is how I was identified as a traditionalist, and how I stuck with that is there was a bunch of gay and trans questions that came up on a quiz once, and I answered kind of pretty much against most of them because I think there was one that said mandatory education for trans people in school, and I answered that I was against that. First, because it's a minority. Second of all, minorities don't have the right to anything. They have to earn their rights. Now, will gay people, gay and trans people, I'm lumping gay people in there because minorities, will minorities have the same rights as anything as everyone else? And would this be a non-issue in, say, 50 years? Absolutely, because gay people, will it be the norm? We're heading that way. But the thing is that locker rooms, even. Really? What? If you're playing on, sure, if you're a trans man playing on a men's team, you should be, well, that should be disclosed to everyone that you are taking on that man's behavior. But if you're a transgender male playing on a female team, realistically, a bunch of women don't want to see a dude in their locker room. A person with all of the dude appendages in their locker room. That's just my theory. That's just me. And I'm sure that the trans person wants to feel as safe as they want to in their environment. There are different locker rooms for different genders. It wouldn't be a bad idea for the protection of the transgender person to go to the opposite, their gender that they're assigned to's locker room for their own protection. You know what I mean? Even though they're playing on a men's team, and wow, we're running really late, I have to take the break. But for their protection to be in an environment where they're not objectified, putting them in a locker room that they don't belong in is objectifying them. Isn't the whole point of these laws not to objectify them? Ta-da! Thechefwonder@gmail.com. Send your hate mail to me. As we continue here on the Generic Live Show for a Sunday, we're going to break down these tragic shootings that have happened in the United States to police officers and from police officers. It's tragic both ways. It's 10:33. Whether we're waking you up or putting you to sleep, this is the Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell. Thanks for joining us here on the Generic Live Show. Whether we're waking you up or putting you to sleep, this is the Generic Live Show. Thanks for joining us here on GLS for a Sunday. We're waking you up or putting you to sleep. I mean, it's 10:35 here where I'm recording, or it's 8:35 in the morning in the US. I mean, it's Sunday around the world, around the globe on Sunday. Glad to be with us. Actually, we're getting a lot of good feedback about the time slot. By the way, for the show. So thank you very much for joining us. Do apologize if I do sound way off. I don't know what's wrong. Someone help me. God, give me strength. Give me strength, God, please. Thanks for joining us here on the show. I want to talk about these tragic shoot-offs that just happened in the US. We want to focus in on the Dallas one, particularly the reaction from the citizens in the shootings. We gave you the two trigger events, no pun intended, their last hour, the shooting in Minnesota and Louisiana. That kind of prompted, to use a better, more suitable word, these events. Want to bring you that five officers are dead, one Dallas officer and one Dallas transit officer, and seven wounded in protest shooting, ambush. Gunman shot, fired, and killed five police officers and wounded seven others during a protest over a fatal police shooting of what they describe as black men in other states, authorities said. It has appeared to be the deadliest day in U.S. law enforcement since 2001 terror attacks. Thursday's bloodshed just unfolded a few blocks of where President John F. Kennedy was slain in 1963. Police Chief David Brown blamed snipers, but it was unclear how many shooters were involved. Authorities initially said there were three suspects in custody, but a fourth died. But Brown later said that police were not certain of all aspects of all suspects had been located. Mayor Mike Rawlings said the dead suspect was slain by police during explosives in a parking garage, where the man had exchanged gunfire with officers. Want to play a video here from the Associated Press. Just a fair warning, in a situation like this, this audio could be disturbing to younger listeners. Take a listen.
I'm born and raised in Dallas, and I think the biggest thing that we've had, something like this, was back in when JFK died, like,
yeah.
To shut the city down, to downtown down like this, it's surreal to me. I can't believe it. Very scary. I mean, we're all out and everybody's trying to get answers, find people, find loved ones, and we kind of don't even know what's going on.
Off to the left, which is like, what, about three blocks from the courthouse, it just started going off. I mean, just pow, 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 pow. And then everybody started running everywhere. Well, as we were leaving, we heard the automatic fire, the back-to-back fire, and it just was wild. Everybody's running everywhere. All people are running around with their hands up.
That is audio. The witness, a testimony, well, almost testimony is there, from witnesses down on the ground. Meanwhile, I want to mention this, and this is an important note, and I had a little bit of a rant last hour. Trust me, it wasn't colourful, and I do expect hate mail from this episode because it has been a rough week. And tragically, if none of the events, the aftermath from these events end up in the best of 2016 list, there's some tragic events that has happened over the last couple of days that will define 2016, unfortunately. Want to mention that the police were allowing the protesters quite freely in the streets of Dallas protest without any interruption. Watching video earlier today in preparation for the show, trying to get as much information as I can to bring to you guys. These were peaceful projects. Protests, excuse me. These were peaceful. And people involved, witnesses, took it too far and took a vendetta out on people. Like I said last hour, and I won't get back into the rant, but like I said last hour, it's not a police, it's not a people thing, it's a combined effort. Procedures weren't followed, and everyone paid the consequences. CBS News has audio. I want to bring it to you if we can. Because it's an interesting perspective. Not available in my current location. Okay, that would explain why it's not playing. But it basically outlines where America goes from here. The scene was described as chaotic. I want to bring information to you that is relevant. The shooting began at around 8:45 p.m. on Thursday, where people had gathered to protest the fatality shootings in Baton Rouge in Louisiana. And then people were fired, ambush style. Allegedly, and I don't have clarity on this one, but people, civilians, were harmed as well in this. Though it is baffling to me how a situation like this happens, and I want to take a different approach to this. So the other two involved, and we'll get to the robot that was involved as well to kill one of the shooters, and that's apparently a big deal. But I want to bring back to the point of, I said a couple of weeks ago, in relation to terror attacks. And these aren't terror attacks, but they have a similar mentality. It's a mentality thing that happens in relation to these situations. It is definitely a mentality thing. But realistically, people do this, but what change is that going to bring? What change is that going to bring? And it's sad in a world in 2016 that we can talk about this all we want. And we saw in the YouTubers case what is going to happen in terms of at fan events, particularly. But that's not going to do for a solution right now. I want to bring you this report of a robot. So Dallas police reveal details of a bomb-carrying robot as a use of last resort. Gunman was killed using a Northrop gun, a Grinman tactical robot carrying 1 pound of C4 explosives. The Dallas Police Department has defended its decision to use robots to kill the gunman who fatally shot five officers. Amid disquiet about the potential legal implications of the killing, the department also gave first public details of the model, robot, and type of explosive device used. Johnson was killed late Thursday by an explosion of the device carried by him by remote control. It's reported to be the first ever killing by a robot carried out by the police in the US. In a statement on Saturday, the Dallas police said they used a robot from Remotech, which manufactured the arms giant Northrop Grumman. The robot was fitted with a claw and arm extension and was carried approximately 1 pound, 145 grams, of C4 plastic plus detonating cord, they said. Quote, this is from the police statement, quote, and when all attempts to negotiate with the suspect, they failed under the exchange of gunfire. The department utilized the mechanical tactical robot as a last resort to deliver an explosion device to save lives of officers and citizens. Now, my perspective on robots is weird. The robot acted well in this case. But what if the robot turned? I would not be surprised if we don't see a lot of this happening in the US. Like, if we didn't see robots carrying out gunfire in the near future, because the gunfire is really unusual when it comes to you know, using robots is unheard of before this case. It's definitely unheard of. Is it a good tactic? Maybe. Could the gunman destroy the robot? Absolutely, then it would have been a big waste of assets. You've got to think of that as well. You've got to be confident in your robot and your technology to kind of use it in that certain way for it to be fully effective in its purpose. You have to be clear, and you have to know what you're doing in terms of directing the robot and doing what it has to do. But it could have backfired on the Dallas Police Department. Unprecedented action threatened to disrupt the established legal order of homicides by law enforcement. Yeah, I get that perspective. I really do. I mean, I fully understand that this robot disturbed the legal order on homicide cases. And again, it's a policy thing. It's a policy thing. Fortunately, it acted in a proper way. It destroyed the gunman. But this requires a lot more research. Elizabeth John, a law professor of the University of California at Davis, told The Guardian last week that the use of killer robots by law enforcement, quote, raised all sorts of new legal, ethical, and technical questions. They certainly do. It's not clear how we should apply if a threat is to a robot. The police may be far away. This is very true. As we continue here on The Generic Live Show, we'll want to bring you Ghostbusters. It's coming out. And what are people... If you don't know about Ghostbusters, well, they'll tell you about it. But first, I want to tell you more about our friends, Australian Gold and Collectibles. They are hitting the road and they are coming to Cairns. Attention, local stations down the line. Australian Gold and Collectibles are heading to Cairns. If you've got any unwanted gold, silver, and collectibles, it is hassle-free. Bring those items down to the Cairns RSL, 115 to 119 The Esplanade in Cairns on the 12th of July between 11 and 2. Gold, silver, and collectibles. But note, they will have they have standards for buying items. They will turn back items if they are significantly damaged, for example, or aren't genuine. So they do hold second-hand buyers' standards. They are fully certified second-hand dealer number 14276. They're credible. They have a no-obligation sell, and the choice is up to you. And it's an instant settlement. Instant. No waiting period. Instant settlement. They will make a fair offer to buy your items and for an instant settlement. Hassle-free. Australian Gold and Collectibles in Cairns. That's right, the 12th of July between 11 and 2. That's 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. Australian Gold and Collectibles, taking the hassle out of getting rid of your unwanted treasure. If you want more information, you can give them a call at 0393 57 9996. That's 0393 57 9996, or you can give them a call on 0403 024058. As we continue here on The Generic Live Show, that's right, it's here. This Thursday is Ghostbusters Day. Brace yourselves. Also, we may or may not... we have a few housekeeping notes to get through. It's like a meeting. It's not necessarily a family meeting because we haven't got anything important to announce. But it's a housekeeping meeting, nevertheless. It's 10:51.
Found the most generic live show. This is The Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell.
Thanks for joining us here on a Sunday, here on The Generic Live Show. Well, the sounds you're hearing is the fine sounds of Super Mario Busters. It's a Ghostbusters and Super Mario mashup. It's quite hilarious. To watch. Whoa.
The princess, it's a me.
I'm sorry, Mario.
Your princess is in another castle.
No. Yeah, it's Ghostbusters week. I mean, it's been an important episode of The Generic Live Show with lots of analysis, but want to bring you something a little bit more lighthearted to end the show on. Now, yes, Ghostbusters. Ghostbusters 3. It has been a long journey to get from there to here, we must say. Even since Ghostbusters 2 premiered in 1989, there was talk for a third movie. Nearly 20 years of various scripts, ideas, and rumors circulated until Paul Feig's new reboot, opening July 14th, finally put the possibility to rest. We spoke, Gizmodo spoke to original film directors Ivan Rickman, as well as Vieg, about what is happening at Ghostbusters 3. Quote, I was working hard on more additional Press the Torch sequel, Rickman said. I was working on it with Harold Ramis and Danny Aykroyd and Lee Esberg and Gene Stubisky. Two funny writers. We had a great script. We had a script which Bill Murray dies in the first 5 minutes because that was the only way he was going to be in it. Aww. And he was a ghost character for part of it. They were pass the torch to a group of younger Ghostbusters, which was Oscar, Bill's supposed son from the second movie. If that's not clear, if that is his son or not. But anyway, and it was very funny. Now, it's a pass the torch kind of movie. This is where Ghostbusters 3 becomes the new Ghostbusters. In recent weeks, it is officially, but not quietly, retitled Sony as Ghostbusters, answered the call to differentiate itself from the first film. That's an awful subtitle. Answer the call? Ghostbusters : answer the call? Well, Ghostbusters opens on July 14th. I was going to read a review, but there's no reviews for this thing out yet. Well, that's certainly gonna suck. Quote, unfortunately, in sort of last half year of development or so, Harold got really sick, and about a year later, he passed away, Rittenham continued, and I realized there was going to be no way I could do this film. I was going to do Ghostbusters. I had to do it with the Ghostbusters. It was not intended doing a later Ghostbusters movie without Arnold and with Bill of all sort of dragging its heels. I wonder. Paul Feig came up with the idea to basically reboot it and still play tribute to the original. Rittman said he had already had Melissa McCarthy and Christian Rigg interested. Wow, this conjecture is really getting to me. So I did. This is a no-brainer. The two are the funniest women in the world. It's an all-female lead, Ghostbusters, and it's coming to your movie screens July 14th. Well, at least there's that. If you want to go see something, go see that, I guess. Thanks for joining us here on the Generic Live Show for a Sunday. I want to mention this real quick. Got a real quick housekeeping announcement to make. It is official. I will be in Melbourne from the 18th to the 25th of August. Did I say July? 18th to 25th of August. Got plenty of things to see and do. GLS on vacation. We'll still be doing a show on the 21st. Need to sort out logistics for that one. But we'll be doing a show on the 21st. Lots to see, lots to do. If you've got anything, please don't hesitate to drop us a line. But want to bring that to you. And we are taking suggestions already. Yeah, I know it's early. We are doing suggestions already on where you think the best of 2016 will take place. That date, for all accounts, will be on 8th of January 2017. We won't be doing a show on the 1st. Well, we will. Well, we might do a show on the 1st. New Year's Day. Oh, that'll be New Year's Rockin' Eve. Ooh. Yeah, that July 1st show might be a New Year's Rockin' Eve one. We'll see. But July 8th January 17th, 8th of January 2017, best of 2016. Taking suggestions on ideas as well. And we've got some pretty cool projects between now and the end of the year that I'm really looking forward to. And the Great Burger Debate was just one of them. So if you've got any ideas, don't be afraid to drop us a line. And we thank you for joining us on such a very... I think it's been a very, very interesting show, despite me being sick and coughing and snorting all over the place. It's been important to at least tackle the issues head on of the last week. Let's hope for a more peaceful and homogenous week. Hopefully we can all live in harmony. It's 11:01.
This has been a Chef Wonder Media production. For more, visit chefwondermedia.net. Delivered fresh to your ear holes. Copyright 2016.
This has been a podcast of the Geek AO Media Network, where you put your geek in and geek out. For more geeky goodness, head over to geek-io.net. Copyright 2016.